chapter 6, text 42. Please share out the books so you one between three or four so that everyone can see one. Yeah, you can give this Gita to the ladies. There's another one here which you can all crowd around.
I'll go get some more.
Atava Yoginam Eva Kule Bhavati Dhimatam Etat Hi Durlabhataram Loke Janma Yat Idrisham. Translation: or he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Verily, such a birth is rare in this world. Purport: birth in a family of yogis or transcendentalists, those with great wisdom, is praised herein because the child born in such a family receives spiritual impetus from the very beginning of his life. It is especially the case in the Acharya or Goswami families. Such families are very learned and devoted by tradition and training, and thus they become spiritual masters. In India there are many such Acharya families, but they have now degenerated due to insufficient education and training. By the grace of the Lord, there are still families that foster transcendentalists generation after generation. It is certainly very fortunate to take birth in such families. Fortunately, both our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and our humble self had the opportunity to take birth in such families by the grace of the Lord, and both of us were trained in the devotional service of the Lord from the very beginning of our lives. Later on we met by the order of the transcendental system. Atava yoginam eva kule bhavati dhimatam etadhidhurlabhataram loke janma yadidrisham. Or he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Verily, such a birth is rare in this world. Lord Krishna is speaking about the yoga bhrashta, a yogi who was not successful in his practice of yoga or is fallen from the practice of yoga. What happens to such a person? This is in answer to a question by Arjuna that what happens to a yogi? Of course, yogi, that's... when Arjuna is talking about a yogi, his understanding is different to the modern Western understanding. Do you all want to keep your Bhagavad Gitas, or we can stack them up so that you don't put them down? You want to hold them such a long time or put them away? We can gather them up if you like. Nowadays, we think of a yogi as someone who practices these exercises for physical health. Or we may think of a yogi as... actually, there's a picture they use. I don't know if they have that still. Someone with long hair and a long beard sitting in a cave. Well, that can be a yogi, but... here, birth in a family of yogis is mentioned. This is the archetypal yogi that we may think of. Anyone like to be like that? Looks like a very difficult system, doesn't it, to practice yoga like that. But here it's talked about taking birth in a family of yogis. So yoga simply means to link, to join. And particularly, yoga means to link with the Supreme. Therefore, we have karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, bhakti yoga. So the yoga bhrashta, someone who is unsuccessful in his practice of yoga, What happens to such a person? We find throughout Bhagavad Gita, those who are studying deeply Bhagavad Gita, they'll find that a repeated theme that Arjuna comes back to is that of the sannyasi, the tyagi. Arjuna, what's going on? Everyone's looking over there. I'm looking to see what's the exciting thing going on over there. It's not that exciting. So, what's going on here? Yeah, Arjuna, throughout Bhagavad Gita, he has this idea of, right up till the last chapter, he asks a question about tyag and sannyas. He keeps on asking about this. Arjuna has this idea of giving up everything. I should just give up everything. He wanted to give up the fight. It's quite astonishing because throughout his life, Arjuna had been fighting. He's trained as a fighter. Not just like a village bully, or not at all like that. A kshatriya is a noble fighter, one who fights for the right cause, and he'd been doing that through his life, throughout his life. But at this stage, he just didn't want to fight. It was, he found the situation too paradoxical. And how can I fight? How can I fight against my guru? The very person who taught me to fight, who has so much affection for me, and who I have so much affection for, is standing in front of me, and I'm supposed to shoot arrows at him and kill him. That's too much to ask. Arjuna, who had fought so many battles, found it too difficult. So therefore he thought, well, better I just leave everything. He could only think in terms of either fighting or giving everything up. He couldn't think that he could possibly do anything good by fighting. What is the shreya here? He used this. What good can come from fighting in such a situation? We can see that Arjuna, he was very concerned with doing the right thing. So we'll find that throughout all the scriptures. In Mahabharata, is in which this Bhagavad Gita appears, is very much about doing what is the right thing to do. That's called dharma. You've all heard the word dharma. Those who are coming from India have heard the word dharma. Now it's become quite a popular word in the West also. Have you all heard the word dharma? All of you have just joined from the... That was a volleyball game, was it? Yeah. It's volleyball? So all of you have just joined from the volleyball. That's football, yeah. Do the girls play football too? Yeah, everything. It's all... everyone does everything nowadays. Mixed. All right. Have you heard the word dharma? No, I haven't heard it. All right. It's one of those words like yoga and karma and guru that's gradually becoming popular. So, dharma is a very difficult word to translate. It's coming from a completely different culture, but basically the sense of dharma is the sense of right and wrong. What is the right thing to do? Arjuna, who's the hero here practically in the Mahabharata, I mean, we hear, actually Arjuna, you'll probably find he's talked about more than Krishna, although Krishna's the Supreme Lord, but Arjuna comes out as the hero. In the battle, Arjuna does more than Krishna, because Krishna already decided from the beginning not to fight. Of course, Krishna's doing everything, but he does it through Arjuna. Just like in the Lanka war, it seemed that Hanuman was more than Ram. Ram had to build a bridge to go to cross over, but Hanuman just jumped. So, what is right and what is wrong? This was Arjuna's dilemma, and he thought that to fight in the, he wasn't against fighting. He wasn't so pie in the sky idealistic as to think that fighting is wrong in all circumstances. Some people think, well, there should be no violence whatsoever. Ahimsa, this is another of those words becoming popular in the Western world gradually. But if there's no hingsa, if there's no violence, if, for instance, the police were to go on strike in Sacramento, it was announced at, now the time is 5:30, if at 6 o'clock it came on the radio that the police are on strike, of course they wouldn't go on strike just in Sacramento, probably statewide, then by 6:30 we'd find the looting would begin. It happened in New Orleans, and then before that, there was a law and order breakdown. But in some city in America, I think it was about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the police went on strike and the looters came out. So the police, the threat of violence keeps the rascals under control to some extent. So Arjuna wasn't so... what's the word? Pie in the sky, or unrealistically idealistic to think that, well, fighting is always bad. Violence is sometimes required. But in this circumstance, he didn't want to fight, and he thought, well, then I just have to give up everything. Either I fight or I give up everything. But Krishna taught him a higher level of understanding. It's not just this or that. There's another whole perspective altogether by which we can do our work, even though there must be some fault in it. We can do our work, we can work in such a way that the principles of dharma are served. We can act in yoga. Yoga yukto bhavarjuna, Krishna told Arjuna, always be fixed in yoga. Even when you're fighting, so Arjuna couldn't work it out. It seemed to him to be very difficult to get this point, which Krishna keeps on emphasizing throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Arjuna is a great person. He's not just an ordinary person. He's a very great person. His sense of dharma, his sense of righteousness is very great. And his achievements are very great. Parantapa. He's addressed as Parantapa, one who is chastising the enemies by his power. Dhananjay, who, great collector of wealth. So Arjuna is a great person, there's no doubt. And he was superficially placed into illusion so that Lord Krishna would speak this Bhagavad Gita to him. And Arjuna understood the Bhagavad Gita in the time that it took Krishna to speak it, whereas since that time, all kinds of people have been trying to understand it and not understanding it and misunderstanding it, which is why we're reading Bhagavad Gita as it is, so that we can understand it, because most of the editions of Bhagavad Gita are editions in which people think they understand it, but they don't understand it. And therefore they don't act like Arjuna. So, Krishna wanted Arjuna to be a yogi. Yoga yukto bhavarjuna. Be a yogi. In all circumstances, be a yogi. But then Arjuna was asking, well, what happens if I become a yogi? And if I become a yogi, I have to leave everything. Again, his misunderstanding coming out. I have to leave everything, so that means I messed up my whole material life. I left my material responsibilities. And then I become a yogi, and what if I'm a flop as a yogi too? An unsuccessful yogi. Then I'm neither here nor there. Neither was I a material success, nor a spiritual success. But Lord Krishna herein assures Arjuna that a yogi, one who makes the endeavor for the highest cause, for linking with the Supreme, he is never vanquished. What happens to such a person is that he gets another chance. He was aiming high, he didn't make it, but he'll get a chance in his next life to be born in a family of yogis, which means that husband and wife are endeavoring for the highest cause. And there may be, we find in the Mahabharata and the Puranas that the rishis, most of them were married, great persons, they're living in the forest with their wives, and they'll have children also. But their aim is spiritual advancement. You were talking about Pravritti Marg and Nivritti Marg. Pravritti Marg means the path of acting according to the Vedic directions with the idea of sense gratification. Dharma Artha Kama. This is Pravritti Marg. Acting according to Dharma for the sake of worldly gain and enjoyment, but according to the Vedic rules. And there's another path, Nivritti. Act according to the Vedic injunctions for the sake of liberation. But actually, Krishna conscious Grihasthas, they are, even though they are living apparently like ordinary people, we can say, but their aim is Krishna. So they are yogis, and their aim of life is not to get born in this material world, but, or not even to get liberated from this material world, but to satisfy Krishna. So devotees of Krishna, whichever ashram they may be in, because of their desire to serve Krishna, they're in a better position than even sannyasis who are not. Even a Krishna conscious Grihastha is in a better situation than a sannyasi who is not interested in serving Krishna. Because the sannyasi who's not interested in serving Krishna has not understood the goal of life, whereas a Grihastha in Krishna consciousness has understood the goal of life, and although he may have material attachments in the form of wife, home, children, all these different things, because his aim is Krishna, Krishna will help him, or her, as we have to say nowadays, and such a person, they will gradually become detached from all those attachments and become fully in Krishna consciousness. You're chanting japa? And you're listening to the class also? How is that possible? Not really possible, is it? You can't fully listen to the holy name and listen to the class also. Hearing Krishna Katar is part of kirtan, but there's certain rules for chanting also. So you can't properly do either. You can't chant japa or hear the class if you try to do both at once. So Arjuna, he was a Grihastha himself, but he's a great devotee. There are many sannyasis in the world, even today, but they cannot say that, they cannot claim they're better than Arjuna, because Arjuna is very dear to Krishna, and therefore he was able to understand Bhagavad Gita. So Lord Krishna says, he's assuring Arjuna that even if one does become such a yogi and falls down from that position, he'll get another chance. It's not the end. Everything is not finished. It's not that you're condemned. A miss is as good as a mile, that saying is there. In archery, if you miss the board, you miss it, you get 0 points. If you miss by half an inch, or if you miss by half a mile, you get the same result, zero. But in Krishna consciousness, Everything is auspicious. Even these children came here. They were listening for about 2 minutes. I didn't expect them to stay longer than that. It's not very interesting for them. They don't have the culture to hear Krishna Katha. So they're unfortunate. But just coming and listening for that 2 minutes, that is fortune for them. That is, if they do nothing else Krishna conscious in their life, that will be for their benefit. In any way in which people come in contact with Krishna, that is beneficial for them. Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti is described that one may perform Krishna conscious activities or activities which are preliminary to Krishna conscious, even without knowing them. Just like, for instance, here on the table is Krishna Prasadam. And it may be that when it's served, some pieces fall on the ground and it remains there, is not seen. And a bird comes and pecks up some piece of rice, which is not just rice, but it's Krishna Prasadam. So that the soul in the body of the bird has no idea. He doesn't offer prayers or any such thing. For him, it's food. That's all. There's no idea of anything spiritual, non-spiritual. The bird is looking for food, sees a grain of rice, it pecks it and eats it and goes off and does whatever else he does. But the result of that is that in the next life, the Atma who is in the body of the bird, whatever he may have been lined up to get, he might have been lined up to get another body as a bird, but he goes directly to a human body with the consciousness favorable or already inclined to Krishna consciousness. Because by taking that little bit of prasad, even though he has no idea that he's doing it, that cleans him from millions of sinful reactions which would have caused him to take so many different bodies. Now, not everyone will believe that. Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmane Vaishnave Swalpam Punyavatam Rajan Vishvasa Naiva Jayate. In a person who has Swalpa Punya, or very little pious credit, faith in Mahaprasad, in Govinda, in the holy name, and in the Vaishnavas does not arise. It requires transcendental faith. This was partially Arjuna's problem also, was that he was thinking that, well, I have to leave everything and become a yogi, do it. But Krishna was repeatedly emphasized to him that if you just do what I want you to do, even though it may seem mundane, that is far better than becoming a so-called yogi or renunciant. Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, so if Krishna wanted him to do that, that apparently mundane activity, because Krishna wanted him to do it, that became far better than any amount of austerities or even reciting mantras or performing yajnas, or because Krishna specifically wanted Arjuna to fight, because Arjuna did that as a surrendering his will to that of Krishna, that became bhakti, which is on a platform. Again, it's better than leaving the world and performing austerities and even studying so many scriptures. What's the point of studying scripture? So that we will develop bhakti. That is the message of all Shastra, to develop bhakti for Krishna. What does bhakti mean? To do what Krishna wants. So for Arjuna to fight was better than performing lots of many yajnas. Something exciting again over there. So bhakti means to do what Krishna wants, with a sense of firm faith in Krishna. So someone who acts as a yogi but hasn't fully developed that consciousness of Krishna, that I am supposed to serve Krishna. Such a person gets the chance to take birth again. He's not thrown out. Okay, go back to, go and be a bird again. You lost it all. You were a bird, you got a chance of a human birth, you took a Krishna consciousness, you didn't make it, okay, get back to being a bird. Take back all your sinful reactions. No. One gets a human birth, and not only a human birth, but specifically with the opportunity to cultivate Krishna consciousness. One will be born in a family of yogis. Such a birth, Loki Janma, Yadidrisha. In this world, such a birth is very rare. It's not often that one gets the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness from the beginning. It makes a difference, obviously. If one has the Srila Prabhupada in this purport, talks about the Acharya families, which previously there were families in which the cultivation of Krishna bhakti was, that was the purpose of the family. They generation after generation, they brought forth children who were by birth very, they're obviously elevated souls from previous life, and then they get born in an Acharya family or a Goswami family, and they're trained in Krishna bhakti, and they act as acharyas, as actual acharyas, very learned in Shastra, very peaceful, self-controlled. And we see some people like that still there are some families, but mostly like that, but it's mostly broken down now. The various circumstances, the culture has broken down. So anyone who gets the chance to be Krishna conscious, even not being born in such a family, then they're very fortunate. Most of you are from Indian background, so the general culture going on in India is still, despite India's frantic rush to become totally materialistic, still the general culture in Hindu families, even if there's no, in Hindu family, the average Hindu family, there's zero or almost not much more than zero spiritual direction. Is it? Even you go in some, a generation ago, every Hindu home had so many, everywhere there'd be so many pictures of Krishna or different demigods. But nowadays, nothing, mostly nothing. They won't have any pictures. There's nothing to show. Maybe there's an Om on the door or something like this, or a picture of Ganesh or some kind of modern art style picture of Ganesh or something like this. Otherwise, nothing. You can only understand that they're a Hindu from the name. That's all. But even then, there's some kind of inclination towards Krishna consciousness. It's actually surprising how much the culture has broken down. But still, in comparison to the way of life in California, the average situation in India is more favorable for Krishna consciousness. So that's considered a better birth, because a better birth from the spiritual point of view, which is ultimately the only one that really matters. Of course, it is mentioned about sukha and dukkha. There is a difference between, just like all of you, we could say that relatively your situation, I don't know you, I just met all of you, or most of you today for the first time, but your position is more like sukha or happiness compared to the, there are so many people in America, as you may have noticed, who are beggars, and they in South California, Southern California, you'll find people live on the beach. They sleep on the beach and they beg something or they sell something cheap and somehow they get it. And obviously their situation is they're not having as much material enjoyment as yourselves, and they look pretty miserable too. And you'd probably all rather be in the present situation that you're in with all its difficulties in their situation, is it not? How many of you would like to sleep on the beach and beg a few coins?
Huh?
They camper. It's good.
For one day,
one night, 2 nights.
For 1 or 2 nights, you can be a bum for 2 nights. Enjoy it. Renunciation. Weekend hippie. Something like that. But well, actually, ultimately, neither situation is very beneficial. Because sukh leads to dukh and dukh leads to sukh. It all goes around. If we don't get out of this cycle of birth and death, then we keep on going round in it. That means the Indra of today is the insect of tomorrow. Oh, what did we say? Aaj ka raja kal ka kuta. The king of today is the dog of tomorrow. Or aaj ka kuta kal ka raja. Something like that. It goes around and around. But the real purpose of life, so someone who has spiritual knowledge, is to understand that either to be a raja, a king, or a dog, it's all suffering. It's all miserable. So our real position is in service to Krishna. So if you get any opportunity to take that up, an intelligent person will take it up. If we have the opportunity from the beginning of life, very good. If we don't, whenever we can take it up, we are very fortunate. In the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned Maharaj Khadvanga. At the very end of life, he took up Krishna consciousness fully. Just, luckily, took it up. And we find in the modern age also, some people, there was one Smartha Brahmana from Andhra Pradesh, who was 70-something years old and was a firm Smartha all his life. And then he got this Bhagavad Gita, as it is, in Telugu language, and read it and said, well, this is it. This is what I should have been doing all my life. Well, there's still time. So he was in a village long way from any ISKCON center. He came to Hyderabad. It was more than an overnight journey. He said, I need a guru. Now I have to take this up. He said, all right, take it up. And he got initiated and he went everywhere in his village area distributing this Bhagavad Gita as it is, and then he passed away. So, of course, we don't recommend that. If you're 30 years old, take it up now. Don't say, I'll do it later, because we may not have the inclination to do that later. If we have the inclination, take it up now. Turnam yatetana patetanam ritta yavan nisriyasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasya. This is the motto of life. I'll say the whole verse because this should be the motto of everyone's life. Lord Krishna states, this is from Bhagavatam, that what another way? Bahusam bhavante. And just the first words I'm forgetting. Manusham artatam anityam apiha dhira. Just the first words somehow I forgot. Anyway, the purport is that we have attained this human form of life after many, many births. It's very rare to attain it, but now we got it. So, now that we got it, we should consider that it's not going to last very long. We're all going to die soon. Everyone heard that? You're all going to die soon. It's not a curse, it's just a statement of fact, that's all. So before we die this time round, we've all died so many times, before we die this time, we should act in such a way that we don't get born again. And we don't die. If we get born again, it means we have to die again. So if we think, well, that's not a very good idea, I have to enjoy myself, then we should consider that we already enjoyed ourselves as a cat, as a dog, as a pigeon, as a buffalo, as a fish, as an Indra, as an insect. Now we should take up that activity which will ensure that we don't get born again. That is Krishna consciousness. And even if we're not successful, we'll get a chance again, but better take it up seriously. All right, so I'll leave the... Yeah, well, that's another. There are many such verses. This is the definitive one, you could say. Durlabha manava janama satsange. This also we find. Govinda Das. Vajahu Haripada Niti Re. So, are there any questions or comments about this?
I have a question about the purport.
A question about the purport, yeah?
Actually, it's something which I've noticed for many, many years, never discussed with anybody. But in the purport, Prabhupada, in the final lines, he definitely hints at his eternal relationship with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami.
Yeah.
And from that we can infer Prabhupada's admitting or stating obliquely that either that he is a great transcendentalist or he is of the same capacity as Bhaktisiddhanta.
Yeah, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is hinting at his eternal relationship with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and also stating obliquely that both that he himself is a great transcendentalist. He has come to this world for a particular purpose.
So, is there anything more you want to say about that?
Oh, yeah, plenty. Srila Prabhupada is talking about families that foster transcendentalist generation after generation, and he says, well, my guru, he was born in such a family. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who was the guru of Srila Prabhupada, appeared in the family of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was himself a great transcendentalist. Although Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it wasn't a traditional line of transcendentalists. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his family was a Shakta family, actually. That means they were worshippers of Kali and Durga. But he himself was a great devotee, and then his son was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And Prabhupada's father was also a pure devotee, not an acharya in the sense that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was. Srila Prabhupada's father, from the descriptions we have from Srila Prabhupada, he was a simple person. He was a merchant. Yeah, he had a cloth shop. But his life was dedicated to Krishna. He would perform puja 3 times a day and he raised his son, Abhay, as a devotee. He hired a mridanga player to teach the young boy how to play mridanga, for instance. And Srila Prabhupada's father, he used to call sadhus every day for lunch. Different sadhus every day, and he would ask them all, bless my son that he will be a pure devotee of Radharani. So, there's both Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. We understand by their activities that they're not ordinary persons who have come in contact with Krishna Bhakti and later they preached, but we can understand by their phenomenal activities that they were sent to this world with a particular service to do by Krishna. It's not any ordinary person can perform activities of that level. So it's all arranged by Krishna that great persons come into this world, the circumstances they come into this world, how they meet. That's certainly true of great devotees, even of, there's no such thing as an ordinary devotee. A devotee's position is always glorious, but we see that if we ask, we can ask so many devotees how they came to this Krishna consciousness, and we'll see in almost every case we'll find that if you look back through their life, even before they came to Krishna consciousness, it's like there's a patterns being set up to bring them to Krishna that you wouldn't realize beforehand, but you can see how, in retrospect, you can see how Krishna is arranging everything. So yes, the Srila Prabhupada is the eternal servant of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They're eternally related as spiritual master and servant. This such great devotees are very, very rare, actually. There's a kind of sub-movement or protest movement around the fringes of ISKCON, which says that only Prabhupada is the guru of ISKCON. No one else should be a guru. Because, well, I guess one reason is they're expecting that every guru should be exactly on the level of Prabhupada, but it's not that everyone is going to be the Maha Maha Bhagavat. And there have been in the history of Gauriya Vaishnavism many thousands of gurus to date. Guru means who takes the mercy from his guru and passes it on faithfully. So that one is not as on the level of Srila Prabhupada doesn't mean that he cannot transmit the mercy and the instructions that Srila Prabhupada gave. But at the same time, we understand Srila Prabhupada is an extraordinarily great devotee, and a guru in ISKCON means one who faithfully follows Srila Prabhupada, just like up to date in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, well, we call it the Ramanuja Sampradaya. So everyone has their acharya, they're initiated in that, but at the same time they look up to the special position of Ramanuja. And in the Madhva Sampradaya, the same thing. Everyone looks up to Madhvacharya, his special position. That doesn't mean there's no gurus. But guru means who represents the great acharya, that's all. Who represents Krishna. And even the great acharya, he also has a guru. Krishna himself, for the sake of teaching others, also accepted a guru. Though he is the guru of the world. Krishnam vande jagat gurum. Yeah.
In the Mayavadi line, they accept Shankaracharya.
Yeah, in the Mayavadi line, yeah.
They accept Shankaracharya, but still they have line.
They also have gurus, yeah. It's a cultural tradition. Yeah. In the Shankara line also, yeah. In the introduction, we have the list of gurus in parampara. Yeah.
So after Krishna comes Lord Brahma. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that since the line is broken...
The line is broken, so I'm re-establishing it. Yeah.
So how was it broken? Because in the chain, you don't figure...
Well, it's Brahma, Krishna, Brahma, Narad, Vyas. and then Vyasa to Madhva. So there's a big, you could say the big gap in time between Vyasa and Madhva. Although Madhva, it said that he went to Badrik Ashram and directly, and actually he presented his commentaries, and then Vyasadeva approved it, like this. So here, it's what is given here. It's not it. The list that is given there doesn't mean that there aren't other lines going on, but this is the line that we trace of prominent acharyas. Otherwise, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's in the list, but we have no record of him initiating anyone. And Rupa Goswami, he's there also, but we don't have no record of him initiating anyone either. So it's a list of the prominent personalities in our sampradaya, in a chronological order, that this message has come down throughout the ages. That it's come down through these persons doesn't mean that it hasn't come down through other persons also. But in the parampara, there are so many branches and sub-branches, and these are the names of the prominent gurus, that's all. Where are you? You're also in that. No, everyone, we're all in parampara. If we're following, and well, especially after one is formally initiated, then one is in the parampara. But it may not be that your name gets in that list. But if you're not in the parampara, then it's a missus as good as a mile in this case.
So Maharaji was basically saying that it's the knowledge which is how it is transmitted, maybe transmitted through multiple ways.
It's no, not well, through various personalities. Persons, yeah.
So it's not what we have as a guru parampara.
Yeah, we don't have any record of Vyasa initiating Madhva, for instance. We don't have any record of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiating anybody. Although persons consider them, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they are considered disciples of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we don't know who their gurus are, except Raghunath Das Goswami. You know, his initiating guru is Yadunandan Acharya.
Maharaj, so we know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa and Sanatan.
Yeah, he instructed them.
So if Diksha means, implies Shiksha.
Diksha implies,
So they certainly got the Shiksha.
Yeah, they certainly got the Shiksha. Divyam Gyanam Yato Dadyat. Diksha is the means by which spiritual knowledge is transmitted. Now, and then the essence of Diksha is, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's stated, Dikka Kale Bhakta Kale Atta Shamarpan. It means to dedicate one's life. To at the time of Diksha, in the Diksha ceremony, one formally dedicates himself. But one's not able to do that. One is not fit to sit in a Diksha ceremony unless he has made that decision to do so previously. And the actual Diksha takes place at the point where one is decided to dedicate oneself fully. Just like Prabhupada said that when he first met his spiritual master, he considered himself a disciple, but he didn't formally take initiation till 11 years later. But he was a disciple. There are various nuances of this topic. It requires more elaboration and elucidation. It's a big topic, actually. Is there anything else? Anyone else like to?
Say, as you said, like, say you person is like making progress in this life, and he doesn't become a, he doesn't get to meet the end goal.
A yogi who is not complete in his practice. Yeah.
If he come back,
he has to take birth again. Yeah.
So, as we see, like, there are many rich families, and their kids are there. But then once they're born, they come into the life, they enjoy the...
Here in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that one who... Prab, what is it? Prapya Punyam. What is it? Prapya Punya Kitan Lokan. One goes to the heavenly planets. Then he gets born in Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe. And this is analyzed as being in the birth of Brahmanas or Vaishyas and pious people. So it's not just... it doesn't mean just being born in a well-to-do family, but it means families who are actually pious and godly, not simply that they have some money. But it may be also, that's the danger, that one may be a yogi in one life, and then when he gets the opportunity, he becomes a bhogi. So that's the danger. Of course, whatever yoga one does, that will not be forgotten. But the danger is that as long as we're in this material world, we have attraction to it. So it's better to go all the way in this life and go all the way to Krishna. Don't take the risk of becoming a sense enjoyer.
Because you going to tend to forget what you did in prior life.
Yes. Well, we find here in the next verse what Krishna says. That on taking a birth in a yogi's family, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life and he tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yoga principles, even without seeking them. So we find that sometimes people who are not born in families of yogis, but they at some point in their life, even though they're born in a materialistic family, they have an overwhelming urge to find out what is the meaning of life and what is the truth. And there are so many followers of Srila Prabhupada all over the world who are born in not Krishna conscious families, or actually very sinful families, but at some point they became attracted to this. So we can understand that that's because in a previous life they had attraction to it. In a previous life they were practicing this, but then there may have been some desire for sinful activities also. So they had an opportunity for sinful life, and then again becoming disgusted with that and having the opportunity to associate with devotees and become fully Krishna conscious. It's a serious thing, isn't it? It's this Krishna consciousness, a very serious thing, very weighty matter. We're talking about guru. Guru means heavy. It means substantial. Weighty matter. It's not... Guru is not someone who just sings a few songs, tells a few jokes, pats babies on the head, and that's... He may do those things also, but that's not the sum and substance of being a guru. He's heavy with knowledge, and heavy with dedication, and maybe... Heavy on the disciple also. Now you have to... Shishya, disciple, means discipline. Shasham, get in line. Don't float around on the mental platform. Surrender to Krishna. So who wants to be a disciple, actually? Consider what it means. Everyone should become a disciple and become disciplined to control the mind and senses and fix them on Krishna. But then you have to understand what that means. It's a great commitment, but the great commitment leads to a great result. And without that, we simply have to waste our lives, birth after birth. The kids are happy playing sports, but it's useless. It's a waste of human life. They have no idea the purpose of life. What is the purpose of life? Simply wasting their time.
Maharaji, he said that kids are actually more conscious because they are more innocent.
Children are more conscious because they are more innocent. Maybe.
Yeah, but they
don't. If they don't have consciousness of Krishna, then what's the use?
Yeah, that's true, but I mean,
And we say children are innocent. What it means is that if they're apparently innocent, that just means that their ungodly propensities haven't yet manifested. Hitler is known as the greatest fiend of the, probably of not only of the 20th century, of the, well, I know it's pretty stiff competition throughout, if you say throughout the Western world. Yes. Anyway, let's say of the 20th century, he's generally considered the most evil person. He must have been he must have a baby, and he was, oh, goo goo gaga. Smiling. We find with Duryodhana, Vidura was telling Dhritarashtra, you just kill him immediately. He was recommending infanticide. With this child, it's better you kill him. Don't let him live. He's going to cause so much trouble.
Because in our tradition, they say that until the child...
What's your tradition?
Well, our family, I mean. Our family.
In your family.
The child, till 5 years, say they go into a temple, they upset something, they are not so careful like we are, then you can forgive them because they are less than 5 years old.
Yeah.
Like Krishna.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's stated. Chanakya Pandit says that. Up to the age of 5, you can indulge them. 5 to 16, discipline them. And then after the age of 16, friendship, more or less. Not exactly friendship, but then they're supposed to become responsible themselves. So shall we finish there? There's no more questions. I want to announce about it, about my books. So you're all coming here regularly, is it?
Yeah, these are all regulars.
Good, very nice.
Since about 2 years.
For about 2 years, good. And I hope practicing at home during the week also,
yeah.
Chanting on beads, studying Bhagavad Gita. Better than trying to is doing it. I say trying to, but you have to make an effort. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm also. There you are. You tell me 1 hour. 1 hour.